Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, Makis Daf Ches. We begin at the Mishnah, which is 10 lines off the top of the Amud. And, you know, in the Torah, in describing the classic example of a Hireg Bishgaga, one who kills inadvertently, describes it as a fellow entering a forest, a Yar. And while he's chopping wood, he encounters his friend mistakenly and kills him. Okay, so let's say the axe flew off the handle, or the wood went flying, you know, the wood chip, etc., as we learned yesterday. In today's daf, we're going to have several halachas which will be based on this pasuk, meaning we're going to learn several halachas from the description, the way the Torah describes the event in a Yar, as we're going to see in our Mishnah. So we begin with a Mishnah, with a halacha, Hazoyrek Evan Lurushis Aram. A fellow tosses a stone into the street, Vaharag, and he kills, unintentionally. Where is it going? He goes to Gullus to atone for that unintentional killing. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, well, it depends. If the victim was there, was in place, prior to this fellow tossing the stone towards him, then yeah, gullus is required. But im mikishayatasa, ha'evan miyadeh, if it was only after the stone left his hand, so when the stone was mid-flight, only then hoitzi halos roshay, did the victim peek his head out into the street and onto the flight path of this stone, Bikibla, and it hit him, Harezapata, then there's no gullus. And this we're going to see in the Gemara. It's again based on the pasuk that we mentioned. Zorak and Sa'evan Lachatzeri. So he threw a stone into his own property, not the street, his own backyard. And it encountered somebody, Vaharag, and killed. Is he liable to gullus? It depends if the other fellow had a right to be there. If the victim had a right to go there. Yeah, then gaila. Then the killer will go to gullus. But he had no business being there. There's no gullus. Shenemar. Oh, this is the pasuk. He encountered his friend in the yar, in the forest. Why mention a yar as an example? To teach us maha yar. What's unique about a forest? It's accessible to all. Rishus lenizek, ulamazek, lekanes lesham. Anybody could enter. The victim, the perpetrator. And therefore, he had a right to be there. And you should have been more careful. You go to gullus. Av kol. Likewise. Anytime gullus is applied, that's only if the episode occurs in an area which he was authorized to enter. A place where the nizik and the mazik had permission to go. As opposed to my own backyard, he had no business being there. I didn't expect him to be roaming around my backyard. The nizik had no business being there. What else do we learn from the pasuk of Yar? Abashol Omer. The pasuk refers to a fellow chopping wood, right? What's unique? What defines that activity? It's a non-mitzvah activity. Ma chativas etzim is rishos. Chopping wood is typically an arbitrary, non-mitzvah activity. And therefore, if something tragic occurs there, there's gullus. Av kol rishos, likewise. Any gullus is only specific to a non-mitzvah activity. So if he was engaged in a mitzvah activity and unwittingly killed somebody, there's no gullus. Yotza, as opposed to a case of ha'av hamakas, but not your father disciplining his son, and something occurs, v'ravari this talmidai, or a teacher, his student, shliach bezen, or a fellow carrying out the malchus, on authority of the Bezdin. So these three individuals, while they're striking, they overdo it and they kill. By mistake, there's no galus, because these are mitzvah activities. Mishnah began with a fellow tossed a stone into the street. He kills. There's galus. Well, galus is only by shogeg. That's outright negligence. It's not shogeg, lushus, or rabim. Mezidhu. Why does he deserve to go to galus? He should get killed for doing that. Amar of Shmuel bar Yitzchak b'soyser's kosolai. He was just demolishing this wall. He didn't realize the stones would go flying. Well, still, the Bailei Leuni should have paid closer attention before he starts demolishing his stones, his walls. Oh, he did it at night. B'soyser was kosolai by Laila. Well, that's not an excuse, but Laila Nami, he should have paid close attention. Put a fence around the area. He should have, warned the passerby. Bailei Leuni. B'soyser was kosolai by Ashba. He was demolishing the structure into a garbage dump. He didn't expect people to be there. And that's why it's a shaygig. Again, let's closely analyze the circumstances. Hai ashba hichadami. Well, what's the nature of this dump? Ish chichibarabim. If people are walking around there. Peshehu. If people are commonly found in this dump. Right? So then, again, he's negligent. Ilosh chichibarabim. If typically there was nobody there. So then, anusu. Then he's even less than a shogeg. It was totally unexpected. There are three levels, right? There's mazid, purposeful, and then there is, on the other side of the spectrum, anus, totally unexpected, out of his hand, unanticipated. There's no galus. Then in the middle is shogeg. It was accidental, but you know what? He could have been more careful, and since he wasn't, he goes to galus to be mechaber. So, mimonoshach, either way, is it a place frequented by the public? Then he's a peshaya, he's amazing. Otherwise, he's an onus. Amra Papa. Okay, so let's shift tracks. Tesis explains, according to Rav Papa, we're not speaking any longer about a guy demolishing his wall. We're speaking about a person, even throwing rocks outright. But we're speaking about a place where he knows typically there are no people at night. It's a place where people typically tend to their personal needs. It's like an outhouse. They only do it at night. People don't. It's not meant for daytime use. It's not private. It so happened that on occasion somebody shows up, even during daytime. And he went and he threw something into that place during daytime, not expecting people to be there. So this qualifies as shaking because look, he cannot be considered outright negligent, because typically nobody's there during daytime. On the other hand, you can't say he's totally innocent. You know why? Because on occasion, somebody is to be found there. So it's somewhere in the middle. It qualifies as a shogeg, in which case golos is applied. This is only when the victim was there before he threw the stone, but if he tossed the stone first and then the victim got in the way of that stone, there's no chiv of galus. Tanur Rabbanan. You know why? Because the pasuk speaks about the item, the weapon, or the flying projectile encountering the victim. Umatza means that the target, so to speak, was there, and this thing went and hit the target. Prat, as opposed to our case, lamamtias atzmoy. The projectile was already mid-flight, and the victim availed himself to the threatening item. So based on this, Rasha, Mekan, Omar, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, im mishiyasas evim yodai. If it was only after the stone was mid-flight, the victim became available for that, availed himself to that threatening item. The kibla and it hit him, potter. The thrower is potter. So do you mean lameima the matzah mikara mashma? The word of matzah is speaking about a pre-existing condition. It encountered something which had previously been there. So matzah is going on that type of context. For a minute, we have an apparent kasha from another discussion, another halacha. regarding a fellow who sold his a field, family estate, and the Torah allows him to go ahead and redeem it, to buy it back. If he suddenly, you know, comes up with funds and he can do it. As opposed to a case where he already had something all along. He had another property. And now he's opting to sell that one to buy this one back. That you can't do. So if suddenly his funds became available to him, yeah. But not if he's going to try to use something which was there all along, which until now he opted not to use. Now suddenly he's deciding to use it to buy back this field, to exchange this one for... Can't do that. Because it says umatza. He encountered. He discovered something new. Some new money. Probably matza as opposed to resources utilizing, tapping into resources that were pre-existing. Shleim keberochek, for instance, he's not allowed to go sell a property further, you know, located at a distance from his town, which is not so, you know, attractive to him right now. You go bekarev in order to use that money to buy back the closer property that he sold. Or another example, bara, he's opting to sell an inferior quality property and use the money of yigal b'yafa to redeem a better property that he sold. You can't do that because umatza means something new, a new twist. These were there all along. He had this option all along. Right? He never had to sell the good property. He could have sold the bad property to begin with. So umatza means that it's something new. Whereas in Makis, in our sugya by Golas, umatza means encountered something that was present all along, a pre-existing condition. How do we reconcile these two gemaras? Amar Rava, you know what? It can go either way. Sometimes a word must be framed within its context. Hacha minyan dekra, hereby. By Golas, we interpret the term umatza based on the surrounding, you know, words in the pasuk. Look at the context. Likewise, regarding the halacha of redemption, it's also based on the context. The pasuk says, well, he was able to afford, he found money. So that means it was a development, something that happened now. Just like that term, indicates some sort of fresh development. Likewise, the word matzah also connects to that type of scenario, and we're speaking about funds that he just discovered. Here by Golas, likewise, we interpret it based on the context, on the rest of the pasuk, which is speaking about a forest, which is certainly a pre-existing phenomenon, right? Umatza dumidiyar. We compare it to the forest. Mayar mididisimikar, just like a forest. It's a pre-existing entity. Afmatza nami. Likewise, the term umatza is speaking about something which was present prior to the item becoming airborne. Mididisimikar. And this is the source of Blessed Rabbi Yaakov's halacha, that if the victim was there all along, there was galus. However, if he only showed up after the item became airborne, and then he was struck by the item, there's no galus. What else do we learn from the pasuk of the forest? That galus is only applicable when he was engaged in a non-mitzvah activity. Hazer Oksa Evan, right? Because just like woodcutting is not a mitzvah. Why? In some situations, cutting wood is a mitzvah. Who said we should draw example from wood chopping, which is a non-mitzvah activity? I'll give you two mitzvah woodcuttings. Dilma mechativas eisim de sukkah. Perhaps he's chopping wood to build a sukkah, which is a mitzvah. Umechativas eisim de marach, or chopping wood for the wood arrangement on the mezbeach. These are mitzvah activities. So perhaps that's the activity that the pasuk is describing. And still the Torah says there's galus. If you kill somebody inadvertently while involved in these activities, Amar Rachmana Ligli. So how do you know to rule out mitzvah? Maybe that's exactly what the pasuk Amalasi responded. No. These activities, as great as they are, but you cannot label them as inherent mitzvah acts. Amalei kivin di matzah chatev, eni chatev. Look, suppose he finds wood. There's wood available in the store in the Home Depot. Does he have to go chop specially for the sukkah? No. It wouldn't be a mitzvah. La mitzvah would not be a mitzvah. Hashtanami. So even now, let's say he doesn't have wood and he has to chop it. You can't define this act as an inherent mitzvah act. It's a hechsher mitzvah. It's preparing for the mitzvah. It's a great thing. But it's not classified inherently as a mitzvah. Since it's not. It's not an inevitable mitzvah act. If he has wood available, right? Hashanami, love mitzvah. And Rashi says, even if he's stuck for wood and he has to chop the wood, you can't define the chativa, the chopping, as a mitzvah. Rather, says Rashi, el asiyas sasuka. The asiyas sasuka is the mitzvah, not the chopping of the wood. And some mefarshim point out that Rashi used the word asiyas sasuka, that the actual building of the sukkah is a mitzvah. Maybe not cutting the wood, but the building of the sukkah, constructing the sukkah is a mitzvah. In fact, there's a Yerushalmi which says you make a bracha, I believe it's a shechiyonu. So, that's an interesting point, and some disagree, that's not what Rashi meant. When Rashi says, Asiyas HaSukkah, just means, you know, using the sukkah, sitting in the sukkah. Okay, this is a big controversy in the Mefarshim, whether or not the building of the sukkah constitutes an actual mitzvah. But in any case, the chopping of the wood is certainly only a preparatory act, a hechsher mitzvah, and not an actual ma'aseh mitzvah itself. Okay, so that pretty much explains why, you know, based on the story of the yar, the chopping wood, we go ahead and we exclude any mitzvah activity, because chopping wood is not an inherent ma'aseh mitzvah. Eisvei Ravina L'Rava. Okay, so you tell me if it's not critical, if it's not, then it's not inherently classified as a mitzvah, right? A mitzvah which is merely being done circumstantially, right? He's chopping wood because he has no wood available. That's not inherently a masa mitzvah. Let's continue to the next examples in the Mishnah. Yotza ava makis benoi, v'ravar edis talmita, v'shneach bezn, father striking his son, etc., etc. Why are these considered inherent mitzvah acts? Is also circumstantial. Right? In the case of the father, in the case of the Rebbe. Why is he called Oisek B'mitzvah? He's only doing it because the kid is not behaving, or the son is not behaving, right? Lema, there as well, we can argue, Kivon de Ilu Gomer. If the kid would be learning properly, would be behaving, Lav Mitzvah, wouldn't be a mitzvah to discipline him. So even though now he has to do it, it's merely a product of circumstance. It's not inherently an act of mitzvah. By default, circumstantially, he has to do it. Hashtanami, love mitzvah. So why is that considered an inherent mitzvah? Answers the Gemara, it is. Because even when the kid is learning, there's a mitzvah to still push him and discipline him, get him out of his laziness and to improve. Hasam afak of the Gemara, even if he's actually learning mitzvah, it's still a mitzvah to discipline him. Dechsiv, yasir bincha, v'enechecha, v'itam adanam lavshecha, be successful and give you nachas. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein points out that it's not for no reason, you can't just slack. Point is, if you see him slackening off, so even if he's actually learning, but see your need, if you see a need for it, you can discipline him. So basically, it's going to be a mitzvah there too. Not just because he's not learning, even if he is, to improve his performance when you see it necessary. So that's what we classify the act of discipline as an act of mitzvah. By the way, the Gemara says a person who strikes an older son is forbidden because it can trigger a violent reaction, in which case he's violating the Isra of Lifnei Iver L'Sitin Michshel, Don't place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. You're triggering a violent reaction on account of that son, which is a sin. The son hits the father back. And the Pele Yoyetz, Sefer Pele Yoyetz, points out that nowadays, I mean, he's talking, you know, hundreds of years, his days already. It doesn't just apply to an older son, to an adult son. Even a younger son says, you know, today, you know, people, kids have learned to assert themselves, right? The world's changed, right? People are more rebellious, more tending to brazenness, right? More says, b'ikvas et mashicha, mishnah nesoita, right? For Mashiach's times. Chutzpah, brazenness will be prevalent. So nowadays, you got to be even more careful. Even a youngster. In fact, the Sefer Zriya Obinyan Bechinach from Shlomo Wolber, he says, kids are already 2-3 years old, can't hit them anymore. And they all bring that, even speaking harshly, it's problematic today. Because the kids are so sensitive, and it's just going to throw them off and bring about rejection, rebellion, chas v'shalom. So, things got to be tailored according to time, place, and generation and culture. Okay. So Rava came back and says, you know what? Actually, I could have said given a better answer to the question. What was the question? Mishnah learns from the Yar, from the forest. It's a non-mitzvah activity, right? Etc., etc. How do I know? Maybe it's a mitzvah wood chopping. Pasuk says, Vasher Yavoi Esre'eo Bayar. Vasher. That word is indicating optionality. He happened to be walking into the yard. He's not doing it for a mitzvah. The boy aisle, if he wishes he goes, the boy loy aisle, otherwise he doesn't go in. It's an optional act. Visakadaita mitzvah. As opposed to if he was engaged in an actual mitzvah, misagadil aisle, is it enough not to go in? Meaning, he's compelled to go there. So the word basher indicates that's an optional non-mitzvah activity. And that was the basis for the drush. Amali Rav Ada, Barava L'Rava. You mean, kolecha d'chsev asher. Wherever the word asher is found in the Torah, it's optional. Diboyu, it's up to him. Elamiyata. Okay, let's take a look at a pasuk. The person's tummy, and he walks into the Beis HaMikdash, he gets kares. V'ish asher. Again, the word asher is implied. Yitmav le'yischat, he became tummy, failed to purify himself, enters the Mikdash, he gets kares. Do you mean that there as well, it's limited to an asher, meaning he contracted tumah optionally, then he's liable to all that? Iboy mitam, iboy lo mitam, was his choice to become tummy or not, then he draws those consequences, but meis mitzvah, suppose he was compelled to do it, it was an unintended meis. He needed to go to become tummy. It's not va'asher. So now he's exempt from the halachis, he can walk into the Mikdash tummy. It wasn't up to him not to become tummy. He needed to do it. There, he's exempt from all the halachis. Well, shani hasam. There is different damakra. An extra pasuk tummy yia, which is coming to cover even this case as well. Mikal makayim. He's also held accountable. Well, that's needed for something else. Ami boyle. Look at the sanya. It's needed for the brisa. Tummy yia is coming to teach you the rabbis tefil yoyim. Even if he immersed in a mikvah, but he hadn't yet experienced nightfall, his purification process is not complete. Tumas Abay, those words are coming to include the Rabbis Mechusa Kippurim in cases where a carbon is required to complete the Tahara process, like Rashi says, Zav, Zava, Yeledes, a woman who gives birth, etc. So in that state, they may not enter the Mikdash yet. So these Sukkim are needed for these halachis. So we have no pasuk to include, to cover our questionable case, where he got tummy because he was compelled to do so. Amalei, he said, Ana ma'oid kamina. I'm coming from the word oid. Oid to masaboy. The word oid is extra to cover that case as well. Ika the masn law, aha. So this back and forth between Rava and Ravina, which, according to our first version, applied to the Mishnah regarding Golas, what constitutes an act of mitzvah, right? Some actually applied this conversation onto a different subject altogether regarding Shemitah, regarding Shabbos, regarding Malachis. Let's see. Pasuk says, 6 days you work, and the seventh day, refrain from b'charush or b'katzar tishbeis, from plowing and katzar and cutting the grain and harvesting. Now, as Rashi points out, very difficult to apply it to Shabbos, because on Shabbos we don't do any work, any malachah. So why does the Torah specify these two? So we shift it over to Shemitah. And the pasuk is saying, look, 6 days a week you work. But even that only applies to the 6 days, to the six years of the Shemitah cycle. On the seventh year, you refrain from doing any land work. Now, Rabbi Kiva Omer, this is an extra unnecessary pasuk. We already know from elsewhere that we don't do land work on Shemitah. Ain it tzarach leimar charesh shal shviyas v'katzer shal shviyas? No need to forbid plowing or cutting on Shemitah itself. We already know that. Sharek Varnam already says, Sod Chalei Sizra v'Chamer Chalei Sizma. Rather, Ella, the pasuk is adding another point. Even doing land work which prepares for Shemitah is forbidden. Ella filu charesh shal erev shviyas. Even to plow before Shemitah, if it's close enough to Shemitah, which benefits Shemitah shenichas shviyas, or the word v'katzer is coming to tell you, v'katzer shal shviyas, the product of Shemitah, which is now on the field, on the eighth year as well. Shiyatzo matzei shviyas. Now it's after Shemitah, but you're picking the seventh year crop. Rashi explains it has kedusha shviyas, has to be treated the way Shemitah product is treated. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, actually, it is referring to Shabbos, not going on Shemitah. Why single out plowing and katzer? To teach you a special heter. Macharish rishos av katzer rishos. The Torah, in mentioning plowing and katzer in the same breath, to tell you that only in that context is it forbidden on Shabbos. Only if it's a non-mitzvah activity, non-mitzvah harvesting of grain. Because just like plowing is always optional, there's no mitzvah to plow ever, right? Likewise, the katzer described in this pasuk, which is forbidden on Shabbos, is limited to a non-mitzvah cutting. As opposed to, if he's cutting for a mitzvah, yatzah ktzir ha'omer, cutting the barley for the omer offering, shul mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to do so, to cut. Pasuk says, uktzartem es ktzir ha'avesem, you meant to cut lishma, not just pick it off the shelf, you meant to cut it for this mitzvah, for the carbon. That is allowed even on Shabbos. Omalei ha'omer rabban l'rab. Oh, now comes the same sort of back and forth that we had in our Mishnah regarding Golas. In defining what constitutes a mitzvah, what doesn't, let's see. You're telling me, Harisha never constitutes a mitzvah. That allows us to build up our, you know, Tao conclusion. So this Chacham asked Rabbah, how do you know? There's no mitzvah plowing? Who says the Pasuk is referring to a non-mitzvah plow? Maybe he's engaged in plowing in preparation for the growing the, you know, the grain for the omer, which is a mitzvah. Maybe that's what the pasuk is speaking about. The subject of the pasuk is mitzvah. And still the pasuk says refrain on Shabbos. Rachmana Tishrei. So on what basis are you determining that harisha is a non-mitzvah activity? We have harisha, which constitutes a mitzvah for the omer. On Malaysia, responded very similar to the Gemara before. It's only a circumstantial mitzvah in case we don't have available. But suppose it's unnecessary. It's already been plowed before Shabbos. Is there a mitzvah to plow on Shabbos? No. But katzer, yes. There is a special mitzvah to cut for the omer. Even if he has plenty on his shelf. The act of katzer for the omer is a special mitzvah. And required even on Shabbos. Omer lo kivon di matzah charesh. Theoretically, if he found a field plowed, meaning the charisha had already been done before Shabbos, ene charesh. There's no... Right? If the field's been plowed for the Omer, is there a mitzvah to plow specifically l'shma? No, he doesn't need to plow again. That factor defines it as a non-mitzvah activity, lav mitzvah, in contrast to katsira, where there's a special mitzvah to harvest for the Omer. Eisvei Ravina L'Rova. Now comes the next question from our Mishnah. Golas is only by a non-mitzvah accident, but if it involved a mitzvah, there's no golas, right? Yotzo Av, Makas Benoi, father striking his son, etc., etc., wherever it's Amida, Shlech Bezen, he's only circumstantial. Necessary, you know, for the moment. Tamai, kivun lema, we can also argue, kivun the ilgamer, if the child, the student, will be learning properly, love mitzvah, there's no need to hit him. Hashtanam la mitzvah. So it's because he's misbehaving and you have to discipline him. That's just circumstantial. It's not inherent. It's not an absolute act of mitzvah. Hassam says, well, no. There, even if he's technically learning, there's always a mitzvah to push him further. If you see he's slackening off. Avgav the gomer, even if he's learning, so inherently we define it as a mitzvah. Hadam Rava. So Rava came back and says, actually, I could have said better, a more definite method of proving that the Torah allows Ktzira So'emer on Shabbos. La milsa de amri. I could have said better. So even if you would argue that if there's no field plowed for the Omer, it would be considered a mitzvah to plow. I mean, even if a circumstantial mitzvah is still considered a mitzvah, technically. But we can learn the pasuk like this. Pasuk mentions Harisha and Ktsira in the same breath. To equate the two. Ktsira dumer de Harisha. The Ktsira which is forbidden on Shabbos must be similar in nature to Harisha. Now, ma Harisha, just like by plowing. You're right, let's say there's nothing plowed, there's a mitzvah to plow. Fine. But if his field is plowed, is there a mitzvah to go and plow again or plow a new field? Right, this field has been plowed and prepared for the Omer. Or whatever. Not for the Omer, just plowed field. Is there a mitzvah to go take another field, unplowed, and plowed for the Omer? No. Matzah Harsh, if he has a field available, plowed, no need to make a new Harisha to plow a new field. Likewise, the Ktsira, the Pasuk speaking of, which is Asran Shabbos, is specific to this type of case where there's no requirement to do it if it's unnecessary. Matzah cuts or any cuts, if he found something cut, there's no need to cut. Only that's forbidden on Shabbos, that type of activity. As opposed to a ktsira, which is obligatory, which is chayef. For instance, cutting for the omer, even if he has plenty of grain sitting on the side, there's a mitzvah, a pasuk, uktzartem is ktsira, right? That's a totally different level of activity. If the pasuk here is forbidding, and forbidden ktsira, speaking about even a ktsira of mitzvah, matzah kotzer and a kotzer, how could he say, well, even if he has a grain available, there's no need to cut. That's untrue. Mitzvah liktzor lahavi. If it's the mitzvah of the Omer, you have to actually cut specifically for the Omer and bring it. For the sake of the Omer. Clearly says Rava, since the pasuk is mentioning both Harisha and Ktsira in the same breath, and we equate the two, and certainly by Harisha, nobody in the world will tell you. You know, maybe if there's not, no, if it wasn't plowed, the mitzvah to plow. Okay, let's say, granted, it's not just, you know, preparatory, it is considered a mitzvah, but certainly not on the same level as Ktsira. Because like Ktsira, even if you have grain sitting in front of you, you have to go ahead and cut special for the Omer. That's dissimilar to Harisha. And apparently the Torah forbade these activities. It will not cover a Ktsira Shel Mitzvah. Okay, let's just summarize the Mishnah and the Gemara. We had several halachas that we learned from the depiction of the yar with the wood flying and all that. We learn that the victim was stationed in place prior to the item becoming airborne. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov learns that from Umatza. We learn that it has to be a place accessible to the victim as well. He had permission to be there, just like the forest. We also learn, this is Abishol speaking, that it happened during a non-mitzvah activity. Just like a fellow chopping wood. Says the Mishnah, Av goyla al dea ben, if a father inadvertently kills his son, he'll go to galus. Now comes the obvious question. We just said a minute ago that he's he's involved in a mitzvah by hitting his son. We'll see. Apparently it was out of context. It wasn't in a mitzvah context. Ben Golodei Av, likewise of a son, inadvertently kills his father, he goes to Golos. What would be the chiddush? We'll see. Hakoil Goel Nodei Yisroel, anybody can go to Golos for killing a Yid. Who's the Hakoil? We'll see in the Gemara. Yisroel Goel Nodei, and likewise Yisroel will go to Golos on account of killing anybody. Chusim Ger Toshav. As opposed to if a Yisroel killed a Ger Toshav, that's a guy who committed to keeping the Sheva Mitzvahs Min Noyach. So in this case, Yisroel will not go to Golos upon killing him. The Ger Toshav ein Goyle, Eloi de Ger Toshav. And the only reason why a Ger Toshav will go to Golos is if he killed another Ger Toshav. We'll see this in the Gemara. First question is, Av Goyle de Aben, why would a father go to Golos for killing his son? But Amr, you just told me, it's a mitzvah activity. Yatza Av Makas Benoi. He's not liable to Golos. The Gomer was speaking that the son is learning. No reason to discipline him. He's behaving. For Amr, you just told me, even so, Avakav the Gomer, even if he's learning, still you got to push him further. Mitzvah, Ka'avid, he still should be pushing him further. The answer is, B'shul Yudinagri. He's not involved in teaching him Torah. He's disciplining him during some vocational training. Shulya means like an apprentice, the Nagri of a carpenter. So that wouldn't justify physical discipline. Why? Shulya the Nagri, even that type of training, he's teaching him a livelihood. And Rashi brings, it's also obligatory upon a father, it's a mitzvah, to train his son. Pasuk says, Re'ei Chaim, Imi'ish Asher Ahavta. Rashi brings that the Pasuk is now connecting, teaching him a trade, teaching him a profession, to marrying him off. Just like there's a mitzvah for a father to look after his son's marriage, likewise to teach him a trade, to teach him some livelihood. So, discipline is very much justified, even in this context. He's giving him his livelihood, he's teaching him his profession. The answer is the Gomer of Nusach Riti. This is his second training. He already has some sort of training which can earn him a livelihood. So now, although the father is adding to his education, but it doesn't really justify physical discipline. Like upon him, it's not technically considered a mitzvah anymore, and therefore, if he should discipline him, that's not going to be excluded from Golos. Okay, so the point is, we're saying it's not the same level mitzvah as the other type of as teaching him Torah and all that. So although he's perhaps justified in disciplining, but it's not going to be exempted. Likewise, a son will have Golos if he accidentally killed his father. Ramini Bevakasha from Abraisa, which excludes him. Maki Nefesh teaches us, Maki Av, only if he killed a stranger, but not his father. Amravkana Lekasha, answer is, it depends who's speaking. Harab Shimon, according to Rab Shimon, there's no Golos. Varabaran, according to them, there is. Why? You see, as Rashi explains, if Reuben killed a stranger, Shimon, what punishment is applied? If he did it, purposely, b'mezid, he gets hereg. Hereg means through a sword, saif. On the other hand, if one injures his father, we had this in Sanhedrin, he's chayvel his father, he gets chenek, death by choking. What about if a person was hereg his father, killed his father? So according to the Rabbanon, he gets saif. Why? If you recall, there was a machlekes in terms of the sequence, the order, the hierarchy of the four various types of death penalty that Bezdin can apply. The last two are hereg and chenek, right? These two that we just described. What's more severe? According to the Rabbanon, sequence is hereg and then chenek. Chenek is the lightest of all, less severe, least severe. So according to the Rabbanon, Just like when Reuben kills Shimon, a stranger, he gets Herek. Likewise, if he kills his father, he gets Herek. There's no reason to, you know, change that punishment. And if Golos applies by killing a stranger, where if it was done B'mezid, it would be Herek. If it's B'shegid, there's Golos. Likewise, by killing a father, it's the same story. No difference. Whereas according to Reb Shimon, who says that it's in reverse, the sequence is Chenek and then Herek. So according to him, Chenek is considered a more severe form of punishment than Herek. Therefore, says Reb Shimon, just like when he injures his father, he gets Chenek. If he kills his father, he gets Chenek too. There's no reason to downgrade it. Why should he get a less severe punishment than if he injures him? Right? Because look, if he kills anybody, he would get Herek. If he injures his father, he gets Chenek. Right? So if he kills his father, he should... He's basically doing two things at once, injuring him and killing him. So he should get the more severe punishment. He should get Chenek, which is more severe than Herek and Saif. Now, who says he's liable to Golas? Who says Golas can address that if it was done by Shagig? We only find Golas addressing an inadvertent murder by a stranger, where the theoretical death penalty, if were done purposely, would be a lighter punishment, Saif, Herek. Then Golas is appropriate. Golas is the atonement. Who says it can atone for a more severe violation, a more severe sin? Killing a father which entails Chenek. Therefore, says the Gemara, according to Reb Shimon, there will be no Golas for this type of case. Okay, let's just see an aside. How Reb Shimon or Rabbanan? Depends on the Shitas. The Reb Shimon, according to Reb Shimon, Dama Chenek Chamer Misayif, who says Chenek is more severe than Saif. And Chenek will apply to killing a father B'mezid. On the flip side, by Shkaga, there is no, who says there's a, we have no source to indicate that Golas can atone for that. Shigiga Saif? Yeah. An inadvertent act which would generate Saif if done purposely. So now, done inadvertently, B'shkaga. Can have Golas atone for it. But Shigiga Chenek L'nitin L'kapara? But acting against the father, which generates chenek, who says that could be atoned for by a golos? So there's no golos. As opposed to the Rabbanon, the Amri Saif, Chamer Mechenek, they say Saif is more severe than chenek. Hayrig Ave B'Shegig Shigas Saif. Therefore, if a person kills his father B'Shegig, he gets Saif. Like if you would kill anybody else. V'Shigas Saif, Nitin L'Kapara. And we know that Saif is given to Kapara through golos. Hence, we resolve this conflict between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Mishnah which says there's Golas, that's the Rabbanon, the Brais is Reb Shimon. Rabba Amar, he says, you know, the Brais could also be working with the Rabbanon. Why is there no Golas? We're not speaking about killing a father. Prado is a Chabura Bava. We speak that he injured his father, B'Shoigig, inadvertently. And the Brais says there's no Golas for that. I mean, perhaps I would say, Kivin de B'mezid Bar Katolahu. Why would I say it's like there's Golas, like a murder? Because just like by a murder done B'mezid, there's a death penalty applied. So when he injures his father, there's also a death penalty. So perhaps you put him on the same boat. Keep him amazed. If it was done purposely, Barakatoli, the person would get killed. The son would get killed. The Shaykh Nami, legally, on the flip side, it was done accidentally, he should go to Golas. Because Golas is a flip side of, right? Kamashman, the point is no. Only by actual murder. B'Shaygi is there Golas, but doesn't apply to other activities. Even to injuring a father, which theoretically can generate Misa upon the son if done b'mezid. Hakol goyim al yedei Yisrael. Hakol goyim al yedei Yisrael. What does the Mishnah mean to cover? By saying Hakol goyim, all go to Golas for striking a Yisrael. To include what? Asuya eved v'kusi. A slave, you know, an eved that's owned by a yid or a kusi, who's also considered like a goy. So if they kill a Yisrael, they go to Gol. Tanina lo tan rabbanon. So our Mishnah supports the following brisa, which says the same. Eved v'kusi goyle v'leik al Yisrael. Yisrael goyle v'leik al kusi. So they did it to Yisrael, they have golas. Or they get malchus. When do they get malchus? We'll see in a minute. And likewise, in the reverse, if Yisrael did it to them. Let's analyze the Braisa. Bishlam Eved Vekusi Goyla de Yisrael, I can understand. They can get Golas for doing it to Yisrael. Viloike, and they can theoretically get Malkus as well. How? Goyla, when is Golas applied? The Kadli, if you kill the Yisrael. Viloike, when Malkus? The Latli. If he applied a curse against the Yisrael, there's Malkus. So that's understood. But the second half, El Yisrael, Goyla, Viloike, El Yekusi, when would Yisrael get Malkus or go to Golas on account of a Kusi victim? The first part, I understand. Rishlam, Goyla, I can understand Golas. The Kadli, if you killed him. B'shegi, El Leike, when would he get Malkus? Am I? Delati, because he cursed him? That wouldn't generate Malkus, which only applies if the Klala was directed against an observant, you know, member of our community. V'nasi v'amcha leisar, which means, b'isim ma'asa amcha, don't curse one who's one of yours. It doesn't apply to Kusi or Eved. Ela marach bar yakeh gan she'ed b'yoy v'huzam. Let's switch gears. Malkus is in the case where they became Edim Zoymimin after attempting to frame this person as one who was liable to Malkus. So it works both ways. Yisrael tried to do it to them. Turns out he was a fabricator. He gets their Malkus. And likewise, vice versa. So the Kavasei Gabi Eved. So let's pick the case of the Eved, who attempted to frame the Yisrael as a Chayiv Malkus. Now, an Eved came to testify. You don't listen to an Eved's testimony. Gabi Eved Shehayed by Yehuzam, he tried to testify, became Eid Zayim. Eved, since one is an Eved Bar Eidesu, how can he testify? He's not qualified to be an Eid. Elo Merach Bar Eidav, Iko Lech Ma'eskin, Kan Sheiko Hako, Shein Bo Shavar Pruta. Okay, let's switch gears again. I'm speaking of a very simple case, that one of these fellows struck the other in a manner which he's not liable for any major payments. It was some sort of slap, which did not really injure him in a way which is costly. It's worth less than a pruta. Okay, so there's no unemployment, there's no doctor bills, because otherwise, if there's any payment in place, then there's no malchus. Rashi says, either you pay or you get malchus. So in this case, there's no payments. He'll get Malkus. Because when you strike somebody, whether the Yid to them or them to the Yid, there's Malkus. He violated the Isser of Pen Yosef. You're not allowed to. Unjustifiably strike somebody physically. If one strikes his friend in a manner which does not generate a payment, because it was worth less than a pruta, Loike, he gets Malkus. And that's what the Braisa is speaking about. How do we get Malkus when a Yid does it to an Eved or Kusi, or vice versa? He hit him without having to pay. And despite the fact that he's an Eved or a Kusi, where we said there's an exemption by Kalala, because he's not called Ba'amcha, he's not a bona fide member of the community. We don't connect the Issa of striking to the Issa of cursing. The exemption of Ba'amcha applies to cursing, but not to striking, in which case he's liable to Malkus if he strikes an Eved or a Kusi. Interesting, even a Kusi. It's technically somewhat of a Yid status, even though he's not really, much of a conformer. Interesting. Okay, so to summarize this mission in the Gemara, there is a galus applied to a father, to a son. Father evidently is not involved in a mitzvah activity. The son, perhaps according to Reb Shimon, there is no galus. As per that brisa, or according to Rava, that brisa is actually speaking in a case where he only injured his father. The chiddush is no galus by a chabura b'shagig. And we have the Mishnah and the Braisa that an Eved Vekusi will have Golas upon striking a Yisrael, killing a Yisrael, and likewise a Yisrael on account of killing a Eved Vekusi. And we explained how Malkus would apply in these cases as well. All the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rabbah, and Besuros Tavis.